But I'm very happy to begin our program by welcoming to the show Wajahat Ali. He's a Daily Beast columnist, well known to many of you, and author of the book Go Back to Where You Come From and Other Helpful Recommendations and How to Become an American. Wajahat is senior fellow at the Western State Center in Auburn Seminary. And we're going to be talking about his recent article titled Kevin McCarthy Learned What Happens When You Dance with Arsonists. Wajahat, thanks so much for making time to come on our program tonight.
Scott, thank you so much. Always look forward to talking to you and trying to defend our democracy from those who profit from being annihilationists and a radicalized, weaponized threat. But other than that, things are going really well.
Okay. And it's the new year is young yet, so we have time to ponder what lies ahead, and that's part of our discussion. So in your recent article that I just mentioned, you outlined that with a very narrow majority in the House, Kevin McCarthy and the Republican Party are now clearly beholden to the extremist white supremacist wing of the Republican Party. In order to win his post, as you talk about and is well covered, as Speaker of the House, after 14 failed ballots, the question really is, what concessions did Kevin McCarthy make to Matt Gaetz, Lauren Boebert, Paul Gosar, and about 17 other members of the so-called Freedom Caucus? Some of those deals are out in the open, but many are not. But more generally, Wajahat, I wonder if you would just talk about what impact you think this new extremist majority that has a hold on Kevin McCarthy, how will they affect the critical issues our nation is going to be dealing with over the next couple of years?
Yeah, I think sometimes you have to take people at their word and you have to look at them literally and seriously. And if you look at the 21 Republicans who hijacked not only the 118th Congress, but also the Republican Party, Scott, let's not forget, that was a humiliating 15 rounds for Kevin McCarthy, where he needed to corral every single vote, right, to win with a bare four-vote majority that he has. That includes, by the way, being friendly to George Santos, if indeed that is his name, the untalented Mr. Ripley, who, in addition to his numerous lies about being Jewish and lies about his mom dying in 9/11, and now is under federal and local investigation for potential, fraud, criminal fraud, right? So this just goes to show you the makeup of the modern Republican Party, that Kevin McCarthy, as of last week, when he was asked to denounce George Santos, he said, well, everyone's innocent until proven guilty. And then even after he had to survive this absolutely humiliating, neutering 15 rounds of kind of just self-masochism, right? The Faustian bargain that he's made, who does he turn around and thank? He thanks Donald Trump and Matt Gaetz. It's like inviting an arsonist into your home and then being surprised when they burn down the house. And that's the analogy I gave in the article, because this is the extremist, radicalized, weaponized force of the GOP that they have deliberately nurtured, watered, fed and courted for several years because it helps them get votes. Well, another analogy. Why are they surprised when the monster that they have created has now escaped the lab and turned on its masters? And so Kevin McCarthy and even now Mitch McConnell, as he's making the deals this week, as we know, they realize that they have empowered these extremists who are completely beholden to their extremist agenda, right? And if you do a quick analysis of these 21 Republicans, they're anti-government, anti-income tax, anti-IRS, anti-literally everything. These are people who openly are perfectly fine bringing down the government, getting a six-figure salary from us, the taxpayers. They're the people who, if you remember this old quote, and I'm going to show you, I'm an old head here, Grover Norquist, anti-tax crusader, conservative, one time said, I'm not against the government. I just want to reduce it so I can drown it in the bathtub, right? Well, these guys are willing to blow up the bathtub and use the AR-15s to kill anyone else who's alive in the house. And this is what the Republican Party is dealing with. It's going to be an obstructionist Republican Party. It's going to be a useless house because they won't be able to move. And what we're going to see is a damage to the United States, especially this week, Scott, with the debt ceiling crisis coming up. And we know that they're going to hijack the American economy and the government to reduce spending. That's what's happening.
And I want to get to the debt ceiling crisis and where that might lead us. But I, first of all, just wanted to really highlight the fact that today's Republican Party has it seems to me, and maybe to you and many of our listeners, it's quite clear now that white supremacy is the driving force behind today's Republican Party. That seems to animate and energize their base. They have Nazis and Ku Klux Klan folks and all manner of extremists who carry AR-15 rifles to protests. Mm. They honor people like Kyle Rittenhouse, who shot dead two people at a protest in Kenosha, Wisconsin. You know, it just seems that violence and racism are the hallmark of today's Republican Party. I'd like to get your take on that.
You're not wrong. Look at the facts. This is a party in which the number three Republican, Elise Stefanik, who started her career as a young moderate conservative, let's not forget that, saw where the Republican Party was going towards MAGA and Trump, did a complete 180, and now promotes and took money out to promote the white supremacist replacement lie, a conspiracy theory, Scott, that has radicalized terrorists to commit violence against black people in Buffalo, against Muslims in Christchurch, against Latinos in El Paso, and against Jews in Pittsburgh. And after all of that, she says, you know what? This is what animates the base. Let me take out ads. They promote anti-Semitism. They hang out with Nick Fuentes, the leader of MAGA and the Republican Party. And don't let anyone tell you different. Even though he's weakened, Donald Trump is still the leader, openly dined with a white nationalist anti-Semitic leader of the young, you know, white nationalist movement, Nick Fuentes, and he went out of his way not to condemn them, because according to a Guardian article, he realized it would be bad for his base. So when you have the leader of the Republican Party dining with Kanye post-anti-Semitism, and Nick Fuentes, and Elise Stefanik promoting the replacement lie, and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Paul Gosar, you know, doubling down on their support for Nick Fuentes, and promoting the big lie, and rationalizing a violent insurrection against our capital, and supporting the Confederate flag, and trying to ban books, and trying to ban diversity initiatives. Why is anyone surprised when people like you and me call a spade and say, this is a white supremacist movement? And another aspect of this that people don't talk about is another animating force behind the violent insurrection against our democracy that thankfully failed was Christian nationalism, which puts a Christian veneer on white supremacy. It's like white supremacy with a cross. So what we're dealing with is a violent, radicalized, theocratic ideology that says that America was created for white men, and God has charged these white men and women to purify the land, and they can use any means necessary. And for them, and this is what's really frightening, and they openly say this, it is not the pacifist Jesus. They say Jesus is a warrior Jesus, and General Boykin, who's a right-wing conservative who was a general during the failed war on terror in the Bush administration, said that Jesus will return with an AR-15. This is the threat that we're dealing with. And every single, you know, like I always joke as a person of color, as a Muslim, can you imagine, Scott, if black and brown people were behaving like this, how would this country respond? What would they do to us our leaders and our organizations and our mosques?
I think we know.
We survived the war on terror. We know. And yet, because it's white conservatives, we give them a pass and we coddle and rationalize white supremacy, the number one domestic terror threat in America, as economic anxiety. And to what detriment? To the cost and detriment of our democracy.
We're speaking with Lajahn Ali, a Daily Beast columnist and author of the book, Go Back to Where You Came From and Other Helpful Recommendations on How to Become an American. We're talking about Lajahn's recent article titled, Kevin McCarthy, Learn What Happens When You Dance with Arsonists. And just an observation on Republicans. Now, I'm pretty sure you and I don't know what's in the hearts of every Republican Party politician. I certainly don't. But I think what is true is that it's very possible that every single Republican is not a racist, is not a white supremacist. But what is true is that when folks in their party spew this vile poison, they are silent. They don't come out and criticize it. And when they do, they're driven out of the party.
You know, I agree with, look, Scott, you and me are not, we're not Ben Carson. We're not heart surgeons. We don't know what's in the heart of Republicans, correct? Right. Maybe you are a heart surgeon. Let me check.
No.
I'm not a doctor, but thankfully I married one. I asked my wife if there's a racist bone in the body. She says, no, there isn't. And I'm not God. I judge people by their actions and their rhetoric and their behavior, right? And like you said, I agree with you that not every Republican voter is a white supremacist, but they have no problem voting for white supremacists. They have no problem rallying behind the most racist president in modern history. They have no problem believing in some aspect of the big lie or the replacement lie, which, by the way, the replacement lie, I want to stress this, came from white supremacists, Scott. This lie that says that there's a deep state headed by the Jews that is using black people, Muslims, women, and immigrants to replace and weaken white civilization comes from the swamp of the Nazis and the KKK, which is now a leading talking point of the Republican Party, one of the two major political parties, and a majority of Republican voters believe in some aspect of the replacement lie in 2023. So when I say that, sure, they're not racist, but they have no problem voting for a racist, am I wrong?
Absolutely not. And, you know, that goes for the politicians, of course, that I was referring to. The fact that they don't speak out against this vile stuff that goes on in their own party speaks volumes about where they stand or their lack of a backbone. But I wanted to get, before we run up against the clock here, I wanted to ask you a bit more about this this potential crisis that might come up in the House. And I'll start with this. Because Democrats control the Senate and the White House, it's not likely that Kevin McCarthy and the Republicans in the House will be able to pass much legislation that goes anywhere. But they do have at least one consequential leverage point, with House approval being necessary to increase the federal debt ceiling. If there's any doubt that the debt limit won't be increased, financial and federal financial markets and consumer confidence will be shaken. And as we saw, and as we saw in a similar situation in 2011, it led to the first ever downgrade of the U.S. sovereign debt rating by Standard & Poor's. Kevin McCarthy and others in the Republican Party have stated their intention to hold the debt ceiling crisis, or to hold the debt ceiling hostage in order to blackmail Democrats and President Biden into agreeing to making deep cuts to Social Security and Medicare benefits. You know, and I guess the question is, what, if anything, can Democrats do to avert a further shredding of the nation's social safety net and or an economic meltdown?
Yeah, so it's one of the situations where I hate saying this, but absolutely Kevin McCarthy is beholden to the extremist wing of the party, these 21 Republicans who want to drown the government, who want to abolish the IRS, who want to abolish government institutions, who want to abolish income tax, right? And he will say, okay, we'll raise the debt ceiling, but you have to gut, you know, all these benefits that actually help people. But by the way, we're perfectly fine with our rich base being deregulated and getting tax cuts. If I were the Democrats, I would play hardball when it comes to the American public and say, look, we're trying to help you with Social Security. We just reduced the cost of healthcare and prescription bills for seniors, right? Thanks to this historic bill. And look at these extremists. Look at extremist MAGA who are willing to harm America and go after your Social Security. I said in the summer, and thankfully someone in the Biden administration probably listened to me. I'll take credit for it. I said, you have to remind people that they're openly now. People like Lindsey Graham are openly bragging about going after Social Security. Well, they messaged on it. And guess what, Scott? A lot of voters are like, nope. We're going to punish you Republicans for that. So it's a messaging strategy where you need the Biden administration, every Democrat, to come out and warn America about what's happening, lay the blame completely at the feet of Kevin McCarthy and House Republicans. And what we've seen in the past is, yes, it harms America, but it also harms Republicans, because people at the end of the day want solutions, right? And this is going to harm them leading up to 2024. The problem is, it is also going to harm the United States. That's the problem of having arsonists in the House. Can we simply survive it? Can we survive for the next 2 years? And thankfully, because we have the White House and the Senate, we barely can, but we're going to take a few dings with it. But the hope here is 2024 comes around, people remember, and Republicans pay a deep price for it. But at the end of the day, the annihilationists and the arsonists don't care about who they harm, and they don't care about the United States. Because if they did, this would never have happened. But it's going to happen. Just wait for it. They're going to hold us hostage.
You know what's confounding is that for decades, these very popular programs, Social Security and Medicare, and they're popular with Democrats, Republicans, and independents alike because of what they do in terms of, you know, creating a social safety net in your old age or when you get sick or disabled, and that affects so many millions of people every day, every year. It's confounding to understand why the Republicans would target Social Security and Medicare. And maybe they are so certain that the Democrats are feckless enough that they can get away with it. And this messaging won't go out to the American people. As you said, it kind of came late in the campaign, right before the midterms. It should have been, you know, the marquee headline.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but, you know, real quick, Scott, I know you're running up against the time because this is who they are. We are dealing with extremists. And if you don't believe me, just look at the last few elections. Did they moderate themselves? Did they moderate themselves? Did they listen to their own audit? Did they pivot back towards the center? They have doubled down on their extremism. And now Marjorie Taylor Greene, like I predicted 2 years ago, is the present and future of the GOP. And she is one of the sane ones who was actually willing to vote for McCarthy and not hijack the 118th Congress. This is who they are. They have not sunk all the way to the bottom yet. And the sad part is the vast majority of American institutions, thankfully not you, still coddle them and still think that if you behave with extremists, that somehow they'll get better. They won't. I give you the 2020 election. I give you 2022. I give you what's happening right now. They have only doubled down on their hate, their racism, and their extremism. And you see DeSantis and Abbott going further and further and further to the right to claim the mantle of MAGA, assuming Donald Trump goes down. But he hasn't gone down yet.
Well, I did want to talk about theater, political theater. Republicans have promised hearings and investigations as well as impeachment proceeding targeting the FBI, Biden administration officials, Biden's son Hunter, and the president himself. There's no doubt that Republicans like Jim Jordan will base these hearings on disinformation, conspiracy theories, you know, excerpts from Fox News reports, and innuendo generally designed to fire up their right-wing base as well as the Fox News audience. However, there's potential for much more damage if the corporate news media provides a daily national platform for these GOP inquisitions, as they did with the Republican effort to damage Hillary Clinton with their almost 3 years of Benghazi hearings. So I wanted to get your perspective on the corporate media and what they're likely to do to really do what they should do, which is shine a harsh light on the Republicans' true intentions and credibility in these investigations and hearings so that people don't get misled and you don't have this both sidesism and false equivalence that always accompanies corporate media and their coverage of the Republicans.
So two things. I'm glad you mentioned that. 2015, Kevin McCarthy bragged openly that they did the hearings against Clinton to harm her leading up to the 2016 election. And guess what? It worked. It created the narrative that she was somehow corrupt. And it was all mainstream media that went along with it, right? Corrupt Clinton, Clinton cash, Benghazi, emails. And it was just enough, Scott, for the average voter to say, both sides are the same. So it won. They worked. And we also knew last year that CBS News said that they were wanted to hire or get cozy with more Republicans because they assumed Republicans would win both the Senate and the House. It was an open memo that went out, right? This is why they hired Mick Mulvaney. We also know that CNN now is actively courting Republicans, right? The new president is trying to warm up to Republicans openly, much to the chagrin of many of their anchors and people inside who believe exactly like you said, is how are we doing on both sides with an extremist movement? So corporate media is going to fail us. And corporations are going to bend the knee to this right-wing movement. Corporations and institutions are like Charlie Brown. The right wing is like Lucy. And the rest of us just sit there and be like, put our head down. And we're like, oh, my God, she's going to take the football. And once she does, they're like, how'd this happen? But there is a difference here, I think, is that when you saw the majority come out and give Democrats the Senate, and the majority rejected Republicans in 2018 and also in 2020 presidential election, and you have more outlets, I think the Republican Party has become so extreme, so hateful, banning books, don't say gay, anti-climate change, right, pro-gun violence. And because the sins of the Trump administration and those around him are so egregious, right? So every time you mention Hunter Biden, well, let me mention Jared Kushner. Every time you mention Joe Biden doing a foolish act, by the way, of leaving behind documents, let's talk about Donald Trump taking thousands of documents and lying about it for months, right? It's one of those situations that I believe will harm Republicans. And I think enough people, Scott, are seeing the difference where they're like, it ain't the same. I know you're trying, but it ain't the same. And the last thing I'll say is Republicans for 2 years have tried to make Hunter Biden a thing. And according to all the polls, most people don't care. They want Republicans to actually do something. But Republicans instead
Just a few days ago, they love their theater. Jim Jordan tweeted, God, guns, and gas stoves. Forget about climate change. Forget about raising the wages. Forget about prescription drugs. Gas stoves.
Yeah. And as you wrote about in a recent article, you've got Ron DeSantis, even now at this late date, going up against Dr. Fauci, creating a panel that will investigate federally approved vaccines that have saved millions of lives. It's just astounding where this party is going. In Florida, it seems to have worked for Ron DeSantis, as you wrote about.
Yeah, so I believe that, and I've been predicting this, right? I said DeSantis and Abbott, in particular, Florida and Texas, watch them. They will be the local testing grounds for national Republican talking points. I wrote an article about this about a year and a half ago. And DeSantis and Abbott have, let's just say, lofty ambitions, Scott, and they want to claim the MAGA mantle. And so they have this right-wing fiefdom in Florida and Texas. And what I've said, and this is my prediction, is that they will dominate in Florida and Texas, right? Like almost like a warlord. I do not think this will translate nationally. I still say that Ron DeSantis is a wet noodle and that he will shrink and shrivel when the spotlight is on him. He doesn't have the charisma. He doesn't have the majority. I think once the majority is exposed to what he's done in Florida, they will be repulsed by him. And I give you the results of the 2022 election. And he still doesn't have the narrative charisma and the 20, 30 year media construction of a Trump, right? He doesn't have that. So I think they realize, okay, I might not become president, but I can become a presidential candidate. And at the very least, I can be a MAGA hero and a MAGA warrior and live the rest of my days with power as a governor or as a major force of the conservative movement. And the sad part is what's worse, a true believer or a person who's cynical, doesn't believe it, but acts like it, like an Elise Stefanik. Mm. Maybe it doesn't matter.
Wow. Well, I have one final question, Ajat, and that has to do with Joe Biden. So there's questions whether Joe Biden should run in 2024. I guess the indications are that he's leaning towards that. Roots Action, a group that I talk with often, is an organization that's running their own Don't Run Joe campaign, calling on Joe Biden not to run in 2024, saying that Democrats need solid leadership to keep Republicans out of the White House in 2024. And I'd like to get your view on Joe Biden and what kind of candidate he might be running up against Trump again in 2024 or DeSantis or some unknown candidate.
For those who are listening, I hope we have made the case, or I've made the case, that the majority is facing a radicalized, weaponized, authoritarian movement. And if you don't believe me, I give you the violent insurrection, and I give you pretty much the weekly actions of the Republican Party. Right now, Joe Biden is the president, and he is the figurehead of the Democratic Party. I think the only question that Democrats or those people who oppose fascism should be entertaining is, how can we make Joe Biden win? Biden is running, Harris is running, right? It's the president-VP combo. I think the Democratic Party is running behind both of them. And so as of now, put all your eggs in that bucket. You don't have to love Joe Biden, but that's okay. You know, perfect cannot be the enemy of what's necessary and what's good right now. Also, Joe Biden has overperformed. I'll give credit where credit's due. Despite facing an obstructionist, radicalized Republican Party, despite having a mansion and a cinema, all these challenges, they've done pretty good. You know, they've done pretty good. And they've tried to keep to their word. And so I tip my hat off to him with what he's been able to accomplish. Obviously, I want them to be a bit more bold. And I think this election showed that when they become bold on women's rights, on abortion, on climate change, on protecting Social Security, what happens, Scott, like I wrote about last year, people respond. And so the Democratic Party, I think, under Joe Biden at this moment, he has this role. And I said this before. He can be this really transformative president, not just a coach or a game manager, who can bring together this establishment Democratic Party that you and I think are critical of, rightfully so, with this movement, this grassroots multicultural movement that is opposing fascism and wants a Democratic Party to look like them and represent their values, and kind of hand the baton over to a young leader in a young movement. I think he's done an able job. I'm critical when we need to be critical, but right now he's the only one running. So we got to put all our eggs in that basket to oppose fascism. My take.
Well said, Wajah. Thanks so much for spending time with us this evening on this Martin Luther King Day. I think we've touched on many of the issues that are important, given the legacy of Dr. King. How can people read your articles? I know the Daily Beast, of course, has a website, but I know you have your own website, and people can also learn about your book, Go Back to Where You Came From.
Yeah, so I write for the Daily Beast, Medium, and MSNBC. I'm a columnist for all three. You can find me on Twitter at Wajahat Ali. And the paperback of my book is out next week. So if you can, pick it up. My mom likes it. Scott likes it.
Yeah.
And I hope, you know, it's about loving a country that doesn't always love us back and how to stretch and push this country to include all of our children as its co-protagonists. And I've been told it's fast-paced and entertaining. So give it a look, give it a read, let me know what you think.
Appreciate you being here, Wajahat, and all you do. Thanks. We'll look forward to our next conversation. Appreciate
Happy belated New Year, sir.
You too. You too.
Later.
Bye-bye. That's Wajahat Ali, Daily Beast columnist and author of the book, Go Back to Where You Came From and Other Helpful Recommendations on How to Become an American.